The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. It's Friday, and I'm glad you're spending another day with me here, November 20th. We're actually live today, which means you can pick up the phone and talk to me and my guest, 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. I want to thank everyone who came out to my open relationship intensive at the Stock Room last weekend. It was a really great class. It was a four-hour intensive, which is a new format for me. And we had almost 50 people there. And what made the class so fantastic was actually the participants. People shared a ton about their own lives, their own struggles and challenges and triumphs and successes in managing their open relationships. And I just think everyone benefited from hearing other people's stories, and I learned new things, which it's hard to teach an old broad new tricks, but I did. So I just want to thank everyone who came out. And I also want to tell you that I have a brand new column, which debuted about a month ago, but I'm late in telling you about it just because I am. Sorry. It's a new column in Glamour. It's called What an Expert Says. And it's basically where I get to interview other sex experts and other sex educators on a very specific topic. I like this interview series because I feel like it kind of goes beyond the 101. Because we're two really experienced educators, we get to dig into the nitty-gritty and kind of go a little bit deeper into topics. My very first debut column was an interview with Elle Chase on body image and sex. And my second column, which just premiered, was with Jamie Waxman on sex and pregnancy. And Jamie actually has a brand new book out. I've got to have her on the show called How to Break Up with Anyone, which is, a book I think I need in my life. So if you go to glamour.com, you can click on Smitten. Smitten is like the love and sex section, or you can search for my name. And also I'm encouraging people to post on my social media who they want me to interview next. Who is a fascinating sex educator who you want to hear more from? Just let me know. Okay, but we've got a fascinating sex educator on the show today. And boy, does this timing just seem like, it seems like kismet is all I can say. Let me tell you who it is and let me tell you why it's kismet. Dr. Chris Donahue is a doctor of clinical sexology and human sexuality, doctoral trained in clinical psychology, a licensed clinical therapist, and a certified sex therapist. Dr. Donahue is an international lecturer and educator, nationally recognized as a sex and relationship expert. He's appeared on WE TV's Sex Box. He was one of the hosts of Logo's Bad Sex. He's been featured in Newsweek. He's been seen all over your television on the Today Show, CNN, HLN, Nightline, The Doctors, which he filmed another segment for just today, OWN, and National Geographic. He's the author of the brand new book, Sex Outside the Lines, Authentic Sexuality in a Sexually Dysfunctional Culture. And man, do we have some sexually dysfunctional culture. Some especially good ideas and representations of it this week, I think, in the news. So without further ado, hey, welcome to Sex Out Loud, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
Can I call you Chris?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Because I said Dr. Donahue.
I don't like to be seen as that stiff, so Chris works far better.
Okay, good. So your new book, which is called Sex Outside the Lines, Authentic Sexuality in a Sexually Dysfunctional Culture. You know this saying when people post on their social media, like, I give no fucks about something, right? I give zero fucks.
Yes.
Okay. Well, to me, this book pulls exactly no punches. It is radical. It's incendiary. It's in your face. It's unapologetic.
These are my favorite adjectives. I'm loving this so much right now.
And it's very complicated, sort of like sex itself, really. So let's discuss the premise of the book, which is that we live in a sexually dysfunctional society. Let's tease that out a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, my heart still breaks after all this time and people like yourself who've been just doing amazing work for such a long period of time in such an extensive way on so many different platforms. We still sadly have a lot of sexual fear, miseducation. And, you know, as a practicing sex therapist, I get to see what comes in my office or, you know, the kinds of questions that get emailed to me. And some of it's still the most basic things where our culture at its root is still perpetuating really problematic ideals and norms around, you know, what's healthy. And I have clients coming in thinking that they're a sex addict. I have clients coming in thinking that they have, you know, sexual problems because of the diversity of what they're aroused by. And there's just so much work to still do.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think is at the root of some of this intense fear? Why are we so scared of sex?
I would say it's obviously historical. But I think, you know, one of the things I keep pointing out right now when I lecture is that the media, I think, is the number one sex educator and socializer in our culture. And so I think that we have historical sex phobia and, you know, tons of conversations have been had about where that comes from. But I think right now the media is perpetuating it and reinforcing it for sure. Every movie I watch or television show I watch, I'm still hearing these negative comments. Even shows that are trying to be really progressive. I was watching, I guess we can call it out. There's a show on TV right now called The Fab Life. And they were still, you know, really slut-shaming without even realizing it, where they were talking about what a girl was wearing. And they said she looks like a stripper. So it's still comments like that that are implying that if you don't dress a certain, you know, white, professional, upper-class way, that there's something wrong with that and that to be looking like a stripper is a bad thing. And then actually, it's so funny, that same episode, they were fat-shaming where they were talking about dressing for your size, which translates to hide your fat body, it's not okay. Mm-hmm. So just things like that, that I think my clients and everyone are still, encountering all the time.
Yeah, I mean, you lay blame very clearly at the feet of mainstream media. And one of the things that you point out, though, which I think transcends media and spills over into our field, is just that this concept of, quote, healthy sex or healthy sexuality that's floating around as a norm is actually quite limited and oppressive.
Yes. And that's, you know, I'm sure this is similar to what you encounter. The number one question I get asked all the time is, am I normal? Am I normal? Am I normal? And I point that out to them. Well, this idea of normal that you think you should be and align with is so narrow and so oppressive. And I explain to them what usually is consistent within that. And I tell them that's actually really, really, really unhealthy. And actually also unrealistic. There's so many people still really prioritizing monogamy. And I explain to those couples, wow, if that's something you want to do in a long-term sustainable way, you better get really comfortable with expanding your sexuality to keep that happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point. because I think you take down monogamy about as easy as you take down like every other institution in this book. But it's interesting because I think that people come in with certain expectations, right, into your office. And so in some ways, what they think is wrong, you would say isn't actually wrong. Like the answer is actually sexual diversity, not you're doing it wrong.
That is brilliant. You just nailed it. That was so eloquently said. Yes, absolutely. Often what they think is the problem is not the problem. And it's often something far divergent from that. And if I had to give like the real sloppy, easy answer, I think the answer to most people's sexual relational problems is creativity and diversity, that it's in fact needed. And that these models of, gosh, how we run our relationships are just so archaic and outdated. And I just mean even beyond monogamy itself, just the expectations we have on ownership of our partner, which clearly is linked to monogamy in some ways, but wanting them to disclose everything. And, you know, just other ideas outside of that as well. But yeah, absolutely. My whole work is to point out that normal is not the goal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have, you know, I do these college lectures and I have a whole slide about normal, like what is normal and normal, you know, are you normal? No, you're not normal because you shouldn't strive to be normal.
Like, yes.
That's not where we should be headed. But people still need to hear that. It is still a radical concept for people to hear.
Absolutely. And even, and again, I don't know about you, but I've been in this for about, you know, over a decade. And I still have to, at times, talk myself out of my own internalized, you know, phobia of being marginal or not quite aligning with the center as everyone else is. And, you know, I'm currently single, and so I'm dating, and I'm having sex. And so I'm really, really, really forced to encounter all of that when people want to know about you, or they want to understand your sexuality, or you have sex for the first time, and you have to kind of be vulnerable, you know, vulnerable and present maybe a minority-based sexual interest. So that's been powerful for me to have to actually do my own work. And yeah, I still have it in me. I mean, I don't know if you encounter it with yourself at this point, but I definitely still do sometimes.
No, I absolutely do. And I check my own self around just internalized issues, like my own internalized issues about how people see me. And I think you probably encounter this, but like sex positive people are generally seen as kind of swinging from the chandeliers and as, you know, whores.
Right.
And again, I think part of that is because there's no other word to say, to describe people with an active sex life or people with a sexually robust imagination and practice.
There it is. I like that word. We are robust.
We're robust. I mean, we're like robust, but like we don't really have a word, right?
No.
So it's either it's reclaim whore or, you know, which still requires a great deal of unpacking, I think.
Yes, it does. And that's a hard one for me. I love people that have reclaimed it for themselves and say, I'm a whore, I'm a slut. I'm not there. That word doesn't work for me. I think the word that works is robust right now.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't really know where I go with that. But yeah, it's an interesting time. And again, it just goes back to our language. Our language clearly doesn't honor sexual health and diversity or relational styles or identity. And so we lack the language. But I love going on the Instagram and Tumblrs and Twitters of the younger queer sex pos crowd that are in their, like, you know, 15, 17, 20. And they're building amazing vocabularies and they're nailing it. And so I'm learning a lot from them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We've got to take a break. I want to remind you people that we're live and you can talk to Dr. Chris and me and tell us how you feel about our sexually dysfunctional culture and how we can take steps to kind of deprogram our own brains around it and have and live authentic sexualities in this world. You can call us at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. Post questions on our Twitter feed at Sex Out Loud Radio. Stay with us. More with Dr. Chris Donahue when we come back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning Expert Guide Sex Education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Psych Up Live with host Dr. Suzanne Phillips is an insider's glimpse at a life from a psychological perspective. It's a look at what matters to us. Why do we laugh? How do we cope with stress? Are men and women really that different? What is it about our relationships? How are they formed? How they work out? And why they sometimes don't? Every week is something new to engage you. Psych Up Live is heard every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll turn up your perspective on life.
Follow us on Twitter at Voice America TRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's Voice America TRN.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Dr. Chris Donahue about his new book, Sex Outside the Lines: Authentic Sexuality in a Sexually Dysfunctional Culture. And we're live today, so you can call us at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788, or post on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. So there's a quote in your book, Chris, I'm quoting here: pornography, sex work, and labels such as sex addiction expose our culture to itself, showing us, and then you quote Laura Kipnis, a detailed blueprint of the culture's anxieties. So it seems to me your book is incredibly timely in the wake of actor Charlie Sheen's disclosure this week that he is HIV positive and the requisite media circus that has followed, which has been full of shame, full of sex phobia, full of sex worker bashing. So is there any part of this discourse that surprised you?
No, and that's what's so disappointing. It's every now and then when these issues arise, I think, oh, maybe this time we'll handle it appropriately, but clearly not. Yeah, you just nailed it. It's a lot of stigma and shaming. I'm always that one that gets frustrated when we start promoting these kinds of issues, because essentially, there's a lot of problem in what this man has done, and that he didn't disclose to his partners, thereby consent is, you know, in question. But I don't like that this is made public. I think that this is a personal relational issue, and that's the platform around which it should be dealt with. I just don't think it's not my business to be aware of such things.
Yeah, you know what struck me as so problematic was that once this came out, there were certain people in Charlie Sheen's life who then had to themselves make statements,
yes,
telling people they weren't HIV positive.
Yes, and that's the thing.
And that was so alarming. And it was like, okay, but what? Why do you have to know? Why are you implicated in this? Well, because people know I slept with Charlie Sheen. So now, yep, I have to come out and say me and my kids are HIV negative. And it seems like we're going down the wrong road on that.
Well, we are, in that these poor people do have to come out and expose themselves, but then it's also problematic that they even have to make a comment about it either way, that it even matters, that in order to be treated the way they had been treated prior, they have to say that they weren't exposed. Well, what's the difference if they had been or if they were positive? There shouldn't be a shift in that, but clearly they're aware that there is, because that's the time we live in. I just did an episode of a TV show today, and we were talking a lot about STDs, and that's the one thing I kept trying to circle back to, is that part of the problem with all of this whole rhetoric, is that we're still talking about like it's a bad thing. And I'm not saying that infections and diseases and viruses are a good thing, but I'm just saying we shouldn't shame them inherently as though something negative happened. I don't know the experience for the person. I have, as I'm sure you do, people that are positive and they don't see themselves as disordered or having an infection. They see themselves as having a difference. And that's part of what I do with my clients that have STDs, is that you now have sex differently. You're now differently bodied. It's not necessarily, it just doesn't necessarily have to be such a positively, a largely negative thing.
Well, and it's not just negative. It's wrapped up with very specific ideas, which is that Charlie Sheen fucked sex workers and porn stars, and that's why he has HIV.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Even though the sex workers that I know are the most the sexually healthiest people I know, and are in great health and take care of themselves and understand consent and understand boundaries and understand self-care, and are not the ones that we have to worry about. It's the people that haven't worked through their sexual shit. those are the ones that are not able to have conversations around STD and exposure and protection and all those different conversations. So, yeah, I'm not worried about the sex workers. You know, they understand themselves. It's everybody else that I think we need to be afraid of.
Yeah, and but I think it's been, you know, it's been placed at the sex workers' feet as sort of their fault, and they become the scapegoats. And also Charlie Sheen's sort of quote-unquote bad behavior led to his HIV, you know, which is incredible. First of all, I feel like it misses the mark in terms of everything we know about HIV and how you can get it and how you can't get it. And truthfully, you can have one encounter with someone that is not, that you're not practicing safer sex with, who has HIV, and you can get it. It doesn't, like, this whole idea that it links up with promiscuity is just not based in reality. It's based in our own fear, I think.
Right. And you just nailed it in saying people that don't practice safer sex, the implication being that sex is always possibly putting at risk for something. But guess what? So is riding the bus in the winter, where people then get the flu and a cold and infection. So is opening the door at your supermarket. You are setting yourself up to have something transmitted to you. So there's so much tied up in this right now. It's really quite horrifying, though. I'm watching like the play-by-play.
Yeah, and it hasn't gotten any better. In fact, I feel like, you know, other people have now jumped into the fold, and it feels like it's getting worse. I mean, it feels like everyone's sort of piling their own shame or projecting their own shame onto Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, and there's something happening right now, because it's, you know, Rent Boy got shut down. So that was that massive attack on the gay escort website. And then the Charlie Sheen thing, and something else happened recently that was really, I don't know. There's just something going on right now. I because of all this, I've gotten rid of cable. I don't even have cable anymore.
Just because it pisses you off so much?
Yeah, it's too much. I can't even watch Law & Order SVU without hearing them doing a lot of sex shaming and really promoting erroneous messages about sexuality and sex crimes and pornography.
Deviance.
Yeah, it's like, it's so offensive.
No, let's talk a little bit about deviance, because one of the other things that you argue in this book is that we are supposed to think of psychology and psychotherapy as a healing modality. And you argue that actually when it comes to sex and sexuality, psychology is not just bad, you say it's dangerous.
Yes. Yeah. And I've been traveling the country at conferences talking about this, and it's, you know, it's upset some people, but I stand behind it. Essentially, oh man, it's multi-layered, but the problem is that people in the mental health field, once they're licensed and they've gotten these degrees, they're seen as quote unquote experts. And, you know, I put that in air quotes, because the problem with that is that there is no actual training in sex therapy, sexuality, sexology, human sexuality, you know, safer sex practices. And so they apply their own shame and sexual issues into the treatment because it's nothing that they've worked through. They apply problematic psychological models, where psychology inherently at its core pathologizes anything that's different or not aligned with standard, you know, functioning and behavior. And so psychology hates creativity and diversity. And for sex, that's where, you know, like me and you are saying, that's where health really, really lies. And so I'm nervous when someone tells me that they've gone to see a therapist to work on a sex issue. because I don't think that that's the person that's trained to do so. And I don't even think most therapists honor sex enough to go out and use it themselves in a way to learn about themselves or evolve.
Well, this is another interesting thing, is that you talk about being a therapist and being a sexually active human being, which to me, it was like hearing something for the very first time. Because I feel like all the therapists I talk to, they sort of never disclose or even imagine themselves to be sexual beings. It's supposed to be left outside the room in some way.
Yes. Oh, man. And again, that's old school, outdated psychological discourse that you are not a person in the room. You're a blank slate. No, you're not. You're a person and you're definitely in the room. But yeah, I'm a sexual being. And I think one of the things that's really powerful about my platform is that I'll talk about that. I talk about a little bit in the book and I'll make references to myself. And I think that that makes the client or the person that I'm speaking to understand that I might be in the process myself, and there's security in that. Where I did the last show I did, I was on a panel with two people that one of them had been married in a monogamous relationship for, I think, 30 plus years. So this person is really far removed from what dating's like and heartbreak and sexual diversity, maybe even sex itself. The other one hadn't had sex in years. And I'm sitting there going, so you don't honor sex if it's been years. And you're going to sit here and work with people and help them work through their own sexualities? How? Mm. How are you going to do that?
Right, but I would say that's the majority of people, right? And I think people truly turn to therapists for the answers. And they think of them as experts. And when they say, this is normal, this isn't normal, that carries a lot of weight with people.
Absolutely. Too much so. Again, a lot of what I do is deprogramming people. And I also do a lot of undiagnosing. I mean, I jokingly, but also meaningfully, tweeted a few times, if you've been diagnosed by a therapist as a sex or love addict, please call me and for free, I will undiagnose you over the phone.
Right. Right.
Okay. Because... yeah, go ahead.
Well, this gets us into sex addiction, which is another huge topic, which we've talked about on the show before, but which, you know, I want to hear your thoughts on, but we've got to take another break. So, hey, do you want to join this conversation? I know you do. You can do it if you're shy on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio, but you can also call and talk to me and Chris. Don't we sound easy to talk to? Sure we do. 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. So coming up, we are going to talk about sex addiction. We're going to talk about some of the incredibly brazen statements you make in this book, and I'm going to quote them. And we're going to talk about things that you recommend in the book, which seem to contradict what sort of the establishment of psychotherapy does. So there's a lot more to get to, people. Please don't go anywhere. More with Chris Donahue when we return.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Sex outside the lines. Authentic sexuality in a sexually dysfunctional culture. That is the name of Dr. Chris Donahue's new book and what we've been talking about this hour. You touched on sexual addiction beforehand by saying that you have tweeted in the past that if someone has been diagnosed with sexual addiction, they can call you for free and you can undiagnose them. But let's dig into this a little bit about how this whole notion of sex addiction came about, what it purports to be, and why it's so problematic. Because at this point, everyone and their mother seems to think that they might be a sex addict, and these sex addiction clinics seem to be popping up every other day.
Yes. Yeah. Well said. They are taking over the field. It's the new hot thing to do. You know, what's interesting is if you look at the forefathers of the field, the guy, Patrick Carnes, who really set it all in motion, isn't a trained therapist. He's definitely not trained in human sexuality, sexology, or sex therapy in any capacity. So this is a guy that came from, you know, a background of non-sex related things, so doesn't necessarily understand it, doesn't understand the health and diversity, clearly has his own sexual trauma and sexual phobias, and built a treatment model around that. And all the people I've trained under that work in sex addiction have their own sexual phobic and traumatic backgrounds that they're kind of vomiting on their clients. And I spent some years training under these people early on, and it was amazing to hear what they were using as their definition of healthy sex versus sex addiction. And their definitions of healthy sex were actually far from healthy and very shaming. So my work started to become somewhat of a reaction to that.
Yeah, because, I mean, if anyone's ever taken the sex addiction quiz, for example, I think if you masturbate every day, you're a sex addict.
Yeah. I mean, they'll even go as sensitive on some of their websites in breaking it down and say, if you have sex outside of a committed relationship, are you kidding me? That's what most of America is doing. So it's a really sweeping pathology. But like you said, the sex addiction inventory, I jokingly say, like, I want people to take that and to use that as a list of what to do to have a healthy sex life and a fun sex life. Use that as like a checklist, you know?
And although sex addiction still hasn't made it into the DSM, which is kind of like the Bible of psychotherapy, it has gained quite a foothold. Yes. In our culture. People believe in it.
Of course, because, again, nothing is more suspect than something sexually based or related. And so America's like, we are on board, sign us up for that. We would love to demonize sex even further. But I'll tell you, like 90 to 95% of the people that come in my office having self-diagnosed as a sex addict or, you know, by someone else, it's truly a sexual miseducation. That's the problem. And when I explain to them what healthy porn use is or what healthy masturbation looks like, or, you know, the idea that it's okay to have sexual creativity and diversity. I've even had clients come to me, and this really breaks my heart, that have been told that because they're having sex with someone that's trans, that that's clearly a fetish and a sex addiction.
Wow.
I mean, sit with that for a minute. That's horrifying. So there's a lot of transphobia and homophobia for sure in the sex addiction model and treatment world.
God, I mean, and also just this idea that all of these things that I would call sexual diversity are considered fetishes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's like people who like feet or people who like pantyhose or people who like smoking, whatever it is, that those are considered a fetish, which to me immediately sort of reeks of deviant.
Oh, absolutely. And the funny thing is, good sex therapy is about actually walking you into a fetish. Let's find alternative creative ways to expand your sexuality. Because again, my theory, and this is the problem with sex therapy as its whole, all the sex therapy trainings I've really pretty much gone to have been really, really cisgendered, heterocentric, and sexist, and really queer phobic. And they talk about sex as only being penetrative and genital based and, you know, man and woman. And every now and then they'll talk a little about trans and stuff like that. And, you know, the idea is that not only sex is bigger than that, but that at some point you want to actually use sex therapeutically. And that's what I think sex therapy should be about, is not fixing sex, but using sex therapeutically. Sex is a way to grow. Sex is a way to learn about yourself. I say this, I think, in the book, that one of the most powerful things you can do if you're having body image issues is to see yourself eroticized and sexualized. I think to have that reflected back is really powerful and healing. And that's where sex can help heal someone.
So you open one of the chapters with this really bold statement, quote, sexual compatibility is the most important attribute for relational success, coming before psychological, emotional, and social compatibility. Okay, so now you're doubling down.
I've dug my heels
You've
in.
Dug your, you have dug your heels in and you are going for it.
Yeah.
You got to explain this one because this is really bold to me.
Yes, it is. It's bold. A couple things. You know, the book is speaking to America, and America is a monogamy-centric, family-centered culture. And so it's really geared towards those people. And it's saying, hey, monogamy, awesome. High five, do your thing. But don't, in that model, leave sex out, because if you're going to take that model that you've been trained to believe is the ideal, you better prioritize sex, because that is a powerful glue that's going to hold you together, or it's a powerful drive that's going to pull you apart. And that's what happens, is couples come in and they think 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years of being together monogamously, that somehow sex is not relevant, or sex is going to handle itself. And those are the couples that come in, where either the man or the woman is saying, we never prioritized sex, we never explored sex, and we don't have that there. And because of that, because our culture is so sexualized, sex is coming up, people are getting aroused, people are getting distracted, and they're not really aware of how to manage it. And so based on my clinical practice, I'm trying to get people to make sex more of a priority, for sure. I think it's one of the more powerful glues we have.
Yeah, I mean, you even say later, like, sexuality is a bridge to reconnect instantly. It can be used in all relationships after any and all conflicts. which, just for the record, if I could solve some of my conflicts with a quick blowjob, that would really save me a lot of time and therapy and heartache, basically.
Well, it's, you know, it's funny because my training, again, is psychological. And so that's always the first lens I go to. And one of the things I teach my clients is how one of the most bonding things we can do is eye contact, touch, and structured time together. And that sex is a really powerful way that kind of pulls those three levels of intimacy and connectivity together. Because it's all about tools. And you know this as a writer and sex educator. People are always like, give us tools. So psychology loves that as well. And so I tell them to always try to hit those things. And I say, sex can help you with that. But we're not raised to believe that. We're not raised to believe that sex is something that can help resolve conflict. Quite the opposite. You're told, if you're not getting along, don't expect sex. Or, I'm mad at you. How dare you want a blowjob from me? And I try to tell people, no. What a beautiful, powerful bonding experience that might make you feel like you're grounded and in a better position to talk about what was a conflict.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things that you recommend in this book that seem to kind of fly in the face of what I'm just going to call the establishment, or like the traditional therapist's playbook. Another thing this brings to mind is that you actually say honesty is not the best policy. Explain yourself.
I know that's another one that scares people. You know, it has to be contextualized a little bit. So there's this idea that if I love you and you love me and we're in a relationship, I'm going to tell you everything and you need to know everything. I'm a big fan of people having boundaries and privacy. So it's not about lying, and it's not permission giving to lie, because I think that, excuse me, lying is a very toxic, it's a toxic, you know, experience. So it's all about, though, having privacy and boundaries. Because, again, I work with a psychological mental health population. And so a lot of this is born out of what I see them struggling with. And so I want to honor that. I love the idea of intimacy, and I love the idea of being known. But I think at times this reified notion of honesty at all costs is quite damaging, because there are times where to disclose something is going to be a hand grenade and ruin a relationship. And we have to be able to shelve things. And I say to clients, you know, before you make a disclosure of any kind and you're trying to honor this honesty policy, you always have to take into account what's going to be the impact of this on your partner in the relationship. Because if it's going to be detrimental, you don't make that disclosure. You don't practice honesty. If your partner's lost a parent or lost their job or going through a tough time, also not the best moment to bring something problematic forth. So don't lie about it. Don't withhold it forever. But I want you to honor that there's sometimes topics that we have to come back to at different times.
I mean, another thing you say that I found fascinating was that interdependence, this idea that interdependence is a bad thing.
In what way?
Well, because you talk about this sort of emphasis on individualism and how that actually kind of keeps everyone not on the same team, essentially, is how I interpreted it, right?
Right, correct, yes.
Not sort of working together towards correct. Something, but really emphasizing like me, and how that doesn't necessarily work.
Yes, absolutely. And that's so another thing, the word I kind of use is codependence is somewhat of a better model. So the short of a long is, you know, again, we live in a capitalistic, individualistic culture. And I think that that is how we also play out our relationships. And, you know, the word I use often is like neoliberal norms. And so it's, we're in competition. It's all about me. It's what I need. People say, you do you, you know, put yourself first. Mm-hmm. That is awesome when you're single. But when you're in a relationship, that is what creates a lot of the problems that clients come into my office to do work around, is that you're not thinking in terms of us or we, you're thinking in terms of me, and you're looking at your partner as someone you're competing against, and it's far too individualistic. And so that stuff is born out of my own dating and relational life with non-American, non-white, other relational sexual minorities, where I've learned this collective interpersonal style which tends to have a lot better of a value system in terms of like relational sustainability and work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We still have more to do here. I have 20 more questions that I know I'm not going to get to. And we have a pretty good listener question, which I think I would like to hear your take on. So let's take another break. And don't go anywhere, though. This is your last chance to call us. Have you gotten your pen or your little device? Have you written or typed in the following number, 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. That's your last chance to talk to us and ask your questions of what can only be described as not your mama's therapist, Dr. Chris Donahue. So stay with us, more Sex Outside the Lines after the break.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasm. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We've been talking sex outside the lines, authentic sexuality in a sexually dysfunctional culture, which is the new book by Dr. Chris Donahue, who is a renegade sexual outlaw therapist who practices right here in LA. So if you're looking for a renegade outlaw sex therapist, he's, you know, I think he's taking clients. Okay, so we've got a question from a listener, which I thought would be really interesting for you and I to kind of riff on. This comes from Randy, and he was actually riffing off of an old show we did with Rachel Kramer Bussell, where she talked about people who write about sex who write under pseudonyms versus people who use their real names, and how that kind of illustrates some of the shame that we're still all sort of carrying around and the stigma. I mean, you know, we talked about the stigma of sex workers, but just the stigma of writing about sex. And Randy says, this leads me to my question. How does one talk about sex out loud? This is a very meta question from Randy. It also opens up other questions, such as how does one avoid coming off as creepy, offensive, overbearing, inappropriate, etc., when it comes to talking about sex? Should talking about sex be primarily restricted to one-on-one conversations? Is there an age-appropriate standard when talking about sex among adults?
Wow, that's a good one.
This is a good one, right?
Yeah, that's really good. You know, I don't think that there's a universal answer. I think it's somewhat subjective. I've decided, and I say this now based on where I'm at now, and I know I will and I hope to evolve beyond this position in terms of everything. But where I'm at now, I definitely see myself as an activist. That's an important part of my identity right now. And so for me, I'm definitely always monitoring my language to make sure that it's liberation-based and it's not oppressing anyone. So I think for me, it's all about the context. Am I in a place where me maybe talking in a really confident, positive way about sex, can that be somewhat of a really awesome intervention in the current conversation or the population I'm around right now? Because if not, I'm not going to do so. But I'm not going to talk about anything that would be oppressive. So I think it's about that question. That's what I use right now, is am I going to oppress or liberate right now what I'm going to say? Because I'm the guy that's going to lean more towards using very honest and open sexual language. But again, within the guise of making sure it's going to have a positive experience. Because some people aren't in a position based on cultural norms and whatnot that they are going to be able to really handle it and tolerate it. And I don't think that we want to, use words at or against people.
No, but I think it's fascinating that he used both the word inappropriate and appropriate in this question, because it, to me, this calls to mind immediately these notions that we should censor ourselves when talking about sex, that talking about sex in and of itself could be creepy and offensive, no matter what tone you take, no matter what words you use, no matter what your body language is while it's happening. But the whole notion of talking about sex can be overbearing or inappropriate to some people.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of our programming.
Right. Yeah, I expect that. I mean, I expect the question to be framed that way because, you know, that's the thing, like, everything has to be done with the understanding of what our current reality and social structure is. You can't say that you want to avoid certain things if that's where you're going to have to count. You have to learn how to kind of bump into those things. So I think, but again, I'm a really social justice-based guy, so I throw the word sex in there with anything else that has to do with people's behavior, identities, or psychology. So I'm looking at my languaging around sex, around identity, around pronouns, around class comments, around race, around sex. So I think for me, it's a bigger question.
Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, Randy, you know, one of the things people ask me this all the time, like, so what could you possibly have to talk about at Thanksgiving with your family? Right. And I say, I talk about my work, and because I believe that, you know, talking about feminist porn or talking about an open relationship workshop is appropriate dinner conversation. When I know I've been told it's not right. But the truth is, like, I'm proud of the work I do. I find it interesting. Other people find it interesting. And if you're going to talk about your work at the bank, why can't I talk about my work at the stockroom, you know, right?
No, absolutely. And that's, I always say, my funny joke is always, if I'm at Whole Foods and I can openly to everyone in line say, ouch, I just bumped my elbow, why can't I say, ow, I just bumped my penis on the, you know, candy rack?
Right.
I totally agree with you. And I think, you know, quote unquote, based on the work that me and you do as experts, we're put in a position to do some of that work more so where other people won't. And I'll tell you a funny story is whenever I go to a dinner party or an event, I have the most positive experience of the work I do. Most people will say, oh, that's so fascinating, or come over here, I wanted to talk to you about something, or I had a question. I don't know if it's because of the environments I'm in specifically. I don't know if it's because I present it in a very confident way where the way I present that I work in the sex field, I say it in a way that says I'm confident in this, and so they take that. I don't know, but I haven't really had negative pushback upon my open sexual dialogue.
Okay, but I think that's another important piece of it, which is that I would tell Randy, which is like you have to model the behavior in some way that you want other people to catch up with. So if you model this discussion of sex as open, as non-judgmental, and is done in an explicit way that's not like prurient or trying to like shock people or offend people, but is explicit for the sense that we need to talk more explicitly about sex. I think that's important. And then you kind of have to take the person's lead, because certainly I have people ask me what I do and I tell people what I do and they either lean in and want to engage me, or they say, I'm going to see if there's any more cocktails, and they and they walk away, and it's like, okay, great. I just gave you the opportunity to like, to start this dialogue. You either want to, or you don't. So I feel like you've got to take people's lead in how, meet them where they are, see how comfortable they are. But I agree with you, Chris, that more and more people are dying for someone to open the conversation up, because they want to talk about it too.
Yeah, I think we're moving, again, it's kind of hypocritical, and there's a lot of, I think we're moving in a direction where we're still trapped in our sex phobia and all that culturally. But at the same time, I think with Miley Cyrus coming out as queer, and Nicki Minaj talking about the importance of female orgasm, and her saying openly, girls, do not let a guy get off without getting you off. I think we're starting to get a little more comfortable. I think maybe we are starting to progress a little bit. So we're pulling ourselves out of that. But again, I think the bottom line for me is that present it in a confident, healthy way, and then people will see it as such. And the work has to be done. I mean, the more we keep dropping our voices and using euphemisms, the more that's going to continue to be how everyone encounters it.
So I also wanted you to talk a little bit about something that you talk about in your book, which is your concept of erotic justice.
Oh, yeah, which we don't have a lot of. I'm doing a lot of research right now for my second book, and I'm looking a lot at criminology and critical criminology and the justice system, and how we don't really have a lot of outright, well, we have no laws that outright protect sexuality per se. It's not something that's, outright put in the Constitution. And so there's a lot of loopholes, there's a lot of legal shaming, and erotic justice, I think, is an area that we need to start to push more towards. And that's why I these days say that I do sexual activism and social justice. Because I think we have to start pulling them together as a social justice issue. That it's not just sexual health and sex as a health issue, but it's also a justice issue as well. There's not enough organizations that you can even turn to get legal support around sexual-based prosecution and rehabilitation. And so I have a lot of people calling me, asking me about that. Where do I turn? Who do I speak to? Who's got my back? And there's very few people that can manage that right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's where our field is headed. And so I'm glad that you brought it up in the book, and I'm glad that you talked about it here, because I do think that that's where the future is.
It has to. Law is still so sex phobic, and it's still used against sexual minorities. And if you look at the prison system, that has its own issues, because I'm definitely leaning towards prison rights and whatnot. But the way sexual minorities are treated in prison, especially transsexuals, transgender, it's heinous. It's heinous. And so that has to be a lens that we start to kind of examine.
Yeah, and so on that note, I just want to acknowledge that today is the Trans Day of Remembrance, and that our trans brothers and sisters, especially within law enforcement and the prison industrial complex, are being brutalized on a daily basis, and it's got to stop. It's got to stop. So light the candle, but also get fucking mad, okay? Okay, we're out of time. Thank you so much for being on the show, Chris.
Thanks for having me. It was awesome to spend time with you.
So you guys, go out and get this book. Chris Donahue's new book is Sex Outside the Lines, Authentic Sexuality in a Sexually Dysfunctional Culture. And hey, if you want to be undiagnosed as a sex addict or just want to have some good old sex therapy or couples therapy, you can find out more about him at drchrisdonahue.com. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at Chris Donahue, and on Instagram at Dr. Donahue. Sounds so much more official, but I think he's just fishing for more dates. Okay. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, segment producer and editor Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my regular engineer, but Michael today, who is still absolutely fabulous, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next week, same time, Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the show. Until then, get on Facebook.com/AskTristan, on the Twitter feed, at Sex Out Loud Radio. And just like Randy asks, take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.